Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. During his long career with the rock group Live, frontman Ed Kowalczyk was the one you watched, a unique vocalist and songwriter who led the York, Pennsylvania group to the top of the charts and worldwide fame.
Into love, the God, into fear, the flame, and to burn the crowd that has a name.
After two decades together, things ended badly for Kowalczyk and his bandmates, who split in 2010 and traded lawsuits. But Kowalczyk has soldiered on, finding continued interest from fans in his hits of the 1990s and second solo album, The Flood and the Mercy. Ed Kowalczyk will visit the Egg in Albany March 20th at 8 p.m. as part of his I Alone acoustic tour, and it's my pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
How are you enjoying being out by yourself for a change?
Oh, my gosh. It's amazing. I mean, the last, almost 5 years now, it's kind of hard to believe it's been that long. Time really does fly when you're having as much fun as we are, and I am. It's been amazing. It's been an incredible renaissance in my life at every level, as a performer, as a writer, changing it up, you know, meeting the amazing musicians I play with now. And the power of that change, you know, the power of that sort of shift really put me back on my toes again. You know, I was kind of getting comfortable doing it the same way for so long, and picking up an acoustic guitar and going out and being the show, you know, for the first time, and was really thrilling, challenging, and everything I needed to sort of rekindle my interest and fire in music.
Do your songs start with just you and acoustic guitar, you know, the way you're out on the road now?
Mostly, and in live as well. You know, most of the songs were, all the lyrics and melodies, and most of the songs came from sort of acoustic guitar beginnings. There were some few jam songs in there that we jammed out, you know, over the years and collaborated on. And that really, my solo records are no different. I do a few collaborations here and there, but 90% or more of me sitting down with an acoustic guitar coming up with you know, the lyrics and melodies and the best songs I can. And, you know, stripping it down into these island acoustic shows and environments like I'll be doing in Albany has been really, really amazing. I think for the fans too, because it really shows them the sort of birthing place of these songs. This is really where they come from. So I think that really connects with them. Like, this is a very natural progression for me.
We'll always be the head cornerstone. The stone that the builder refused. We'll always be the head cornerstone. You're a builder.
I have to imagine that you've performed some of these songs, thousands of times, and, you know, you probably hear them, you know, when you're walking through the grocery store sometimes. Do they sound different to you now when you're playing them acoustic, you know, and knowing all the history that's gone into them?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so much more experience and life lived behind these songs now. I mean, for example, you know, Throwing Copper and Lightning Crashes. Lightning Crashes is a song about, you know, that I wrote sort of this montage of meaning about, you know, I envisioned a hospital, you know, where there were babies being born and people, you know, passing away and all of this happening in this one place. I thought was a really powerful image, and sort of started the song from there and followed that thread. And the interesting thing, you know, is I didn't have any kids back then. You know, I was only 21, 22 when I wrote the song, and now I have four. So, you know, for me, it's got that much more humanity in it, you know, so it feels like a new song to me every time, you know, especially now.
The confusion that was hers belongs now to some baby down the hall. Oh, I feel it coming back again like a rolling thunder chasing the wind, forces pulling from the center of the earth again. I can feel it.
When you're out there on your own now, it's kind of the first time you've really addressed what happened in the group. You gave an interview to Rolling Stone recently, and that was kind of breaking a several years silence. Why now are you discussing kind of your side of the story?
Well, my whole feeling about it from day one, when the sort of dirty laundry of whatever was going on was aired, not by me, my feeling right away, my initial gut response was, this is not what this should be about. This should have been none of this should have ever been made public. In fact, the fans deserve the music. They deserve the performance. They deserve a direct line to that. I've spent so many years building that relationship that the last thing I wanted to see happen was to have that be distracted from. And so it was quite a discipline for me because I, of course, with all my heart and soul, wanted to, you know, scream and shout and let my side be known. But at the same time, I really hold this sort of artistic and musical relationship I have with my fans. I hold it really dear to me. And so I just ignored it. And I just sort of stayed clear of it. And I think that what happened was I allowed my sites and my Facebook page and my shows, of course, and my records to be a kind of, you know, for the fans, the long-term fans, a kind of oasis where they come and not hear that stuff, not hear the back and forth and that. So I think it really helped me, and it helped just the whole transition. Of course, and then you mentioned that I did finally, you know, give my side to a friend of mine there, Rolling Stone, and it felt good to do that because, but it was on my time and on my terms, and I feel like I handled it about as best as I could.
I wonder when something like this happens. You know, you've been known as for your association with a group. Now you've got to go out under your own name, and sometimes people are skeptical about that. Did you have any worries about, you know, whether the fans would come with you?
I didn't have any worries about that. You know, I knew there would be challenges of, you know, there's always the sort of logistical challenges of getting, you know, promoting and marketing the event and themselves. And for years it was known as Live. So we sort of had a learning process there of getting out there and making sure that people knew what the show was and what I was doing. And right away we found incredible success in Australia and all over the world and here. The fans seemed to be as ready as I was for the shift, really. They were ready to hear these songs acoustically and stripped down, and they were ready to hear what I was doing musically. And I've put out two full albums and an EP in the last 4 years, which I think probably is the most prolific I've been as a writer, even in live. And I have another record that's coming along quite well writing-wise. So I think all of that added up to just a really great and exciting new sort of look at my work and my art and my performances from a fan base that has been around for, thank God, for a really long time and are still really interested in it.
How much did the events and the drama of having this group that you've been a part of for so long suddenly come to a very kind of ugly and public ending? But did that in some way influence and help the writing process as you kind of launched into the solo career?
Well, that's a beautiful thing about it is that, you know, I've always written my own lyrics, melodies, music, and I've always lived my life and just when it was time to write, you know, kind of use it as a catharsis to express wherever I was as a person. I've just been really blessed to have this outlet, not only make a living at it and go all over the world, but just have it in general as a personal, you know, like I said, a cathartic kind of thing that I can do, that I can process life and express myself and turn what can be negative things, which this clearly was a negative time, into something that actually added to the depth, especially of The Flood and the Mercy, I feel. I just listened to the record not that long ago and thought, wow, this has all the emotional depth that I wanted it to have and that I was feeling in those months that I was working on it. So yeah, definitely made lemonade out of lemons. That's what I want to say. Lemonade, right.
Just one more question on that. When you're in a group that, you know, becomes hugely successful, are there discussions within the band about, you know, how to keep it together, whether you want to keep it together? You know, a lot of bands have broken up and a lot of bands have sued each other in history. Is that something that you're aware of, you know, while you're kind of living it?
Well, I think like any, you know, relationship that lasts as long as that one, and especially we started so young, you know, there were, we really sort of grew, we really did grow up together. We really did have a sort of shared history that was pretty, pretty profound. I think that, what they call it, water under the bridge. There was tons of it, you know, over the years. And, you move and you adapt and you get through things and Every band's different. Unfortunately, the way that live wrapped up was pretty ugly. I will say that it wasn't my fault, but I didn't, you know, air the laundry that started it all and kind of interrupted what was supposed to be another plan of a respite and a hiatus. But all that aside, yeah, every band's different. I think that, you know, we made a hell of a run of it for a really long time, and it ended the way it ended, and I'm really happier than ever, and so no regrets, and in fact, quite thrilled to be doing what I'm doing.
And when you talked about the kind of the plan for the band, you had already had your eye on doing some solo music and taking a little break when this all started to fall apart. But I wonder, what was it about, you know, a solo record and solo tours that so appealed to you?
Well, I think just doing something different. I think that, you know, after so many years doing it the same way, that just a new drummer, a new bass player, a new, you know, background singer, a new producer, just the newness of that was really thrilling and really what I needed. And I didn't realize I needed it as badly as I did until I started to work with others. And again, that coupled with the fact that these songs are then being looked at and heard in a whole different way was just a real kick in the pants as far as like, let's go. This is it. This is great. And the fans love it. I mean, they're just over the moon. I mean, as we progress into this and continue to bring these different forms of my work out, as you know, whether it's acoustic or full band or with an orchestra or whatever, I'm doing lots of stuff now. They're all being embraced, and the variety and the sort of eclectic aspect of it's being embraced, which I am really happy about because it's exactly what, you know, I kind of dreamt of doing.
I want to ask you about the state of rock and roll, because when your group first really broke and sold a ton of records, it was an era when pop music was really rock music. And I feel like watching the charts nowadays, that has definitely shifted. And I wonder what you make of that.
Oh, yeah, big time. It's an interesting thing because you have sort of two perspectives you can take as an artist, you know, and that does it for a living. You can really look at, which is what I mostly do, which is sort of approach it kind of monolithically. You know, it's just my records, my world, my fans, you know, my interaction with them. I stay really hyper-focused on that. Just because it's art, you know, it really doesn't, you know, at a real deep level for me, it doesn't ever fall into a category. I don't really think that way when I'm doing it. I don't think that way when I'm performing it. But then there's this other perspective you can take. You say, okay, well, how do I fit into the, you know, pop music at large, or do I, or whatever? And there were definitely a period, there was, like you mentioned, in the 90s, where it seemed like doing what I was doing was just what people, that's the channel they were on, you know, and that changed, at least at that pop level. Of clearly now is way different in terms of the type of music that people are, you know, generally speaking, you know, just getting on the radio and that kind of thing. So I kind of flip back and forth. I'll take that perspective every once in a while, but really not very often, because I'm just become so hyper focused, especially now as a solo artist, on my fans and sort of being, you know, sort of its own system and its own set of expectations from them, from me. It's really its own world. But it's fun to, you know, it's still fun to get on the radio. I still get on the radio and stuff like that. Just go out and do those tours and promote and that kind of thing. You have to. But I try not to spend too much time on that aspect.
Let's go back to the fans for a second. Earlier, while we were talking, you mentioned how the meaning of songs had changed for you because, you know, you wrote some of them 20 years ago, and you're a different person. I wonder how the fans, in your estimation, have changed along with the music, because, you know, people who bought Throwing Copper in 1994 are in a whole different space now.
Yeah, well, that's been the remarkable thing. I mean, we've been performing Throwing Copper from top to bottom. We did it in Australia to huge response with my new band, and I hadn't played that record from top to bottom ever. I mean, we were always picking and choosing sets, you know, and different records and that kind of thing. So, you know, for me, it was a real eye opener, because I realized, looking at the fans' experience of it as I was singing and as I was singing the songs, and I was, you know, reliving those lyrics that I hadn't sung, songs like TBD and Stage for a long time, or Top. And I was like, wow, I'm still interested in this. You know, I'm 42 now, and even though I wrote this stuff when I was, you know, 22, 23 years old, it's still relevant for me. It's still questions that I have. It's still life that I'm trying to figure out. And I'm looking at my fans going, you know, they're still working with this music. They're still consuming it and getting something from it. And it's really amazing, because there are things that come out in sort of trends that, you know, you don't necessarily want to listen to again after 10, 15 years. You know, it's not necessarily something you want to revisit. Well, this music has become so embedded in so many people's lives, and it's still relevant to them. It's still something that helps them. It's still something that they're interested in. And I think it's the nature of the lyric. I try not to, you know, conceptualize too much about, you know, things as I'm going. I'm really sort of just reaching into these sort of probability clouds of meaning and kind of pulling things out and keeping it universal and keeping it hopefully timeless. And it seems to be working.
Well, Ed Kowalczyk will be at the Egg in Albany Thursday, March 20th at 8 o'clock. It's part of his I Alone acoustic tour. Ed, it's just been a real pleasure to have you on the show, and good luck out there and good luck with your songwriting.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.